Flashback Twin Cities, Club 1220. Is it spring? Is it fall? Is it winter? Is it summer? I can't tell.
It's one of your favorite colors of gray. That's what it is.
Yeah, 50 Shades of
I don't
spring.
Know what
you mean. This is Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osman, and back from special assignment somewhere in parts unknown, our friend Tom.
Kind of like James Bond.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
really, if you get down to the nitty gritty.
Well, it's a good thing you came back just in time for some more snow.
Come on.
I know.
I got here on Wednesday night, opened up my curtains on Thursday morning to see snow coming down. First words out of my mouth, probably can't air.
But so can you share the destination you were at, the place that you were on special assignment at?
I was special assignment over in the Bahamas.
And
over in the Bahamas, Nassau.
Nassau, that is fantastic. And we're grateful to have you back. We had fun with Jenna last week.
Oh, yeah. She's always good.
She brought some sunshine with her, and appreciate you bringing back the clouds and gray.
You're welcome.
I know. We had a lot to do today. We are going to have, actually, let's start out with our guest. Is Deborah on the line? Not yet. Okay.
Definitely am.
Well, and to our listeners, this is one of our first guests we had in the show. She was known as Debbie Ely on TV, on WCCO-TV. And Facebook friends here on tcmedianow.com. I find out, I see this picture of our friend Deborah with Drew Carey, and I'm wondering, well, what is going on there? We don't have a Hollywood reporter, but we do have the next best thing, and that is Deborah Ely Lawrence. And Deborah, what happened last week? I'm watching WCCO TV, watching The Price is Right, and there you are.
Well, as I got to do it, I got to come on down and be a contestant.
So tell me a little bit about this, because there's a lot of us here who want to win cash and prizes and be on stage. We've hear all these, I search the web and trying to find out what does it take to get on The Price is Right. You're in line, and they pick you.
You have to start out with tickets. We knew we were going to go out to Southern California for our daughter's spring break, and so ahead of time, my husband got online and started looking for tickets to some of the shows. And while he couldn't score tickets to Ellen, he did score tickets to The Price is Right and American Idol. And so we flew out there and showed up bright and early on the 27th of March. And when you get out there to this show, you stand in line for a mighty long time. And so we got out there and had a chance to meet a lot of very interesting people from across the United States. It is a true cross-section of people. There were some fellow Minnesotans there. And you wait and you wait and you wait. And then about an hour or so before they tape the show, the producer comes out and he groups together groups of about 10 or 12 people and does a quick interview of everybody around the big picnic table. And you tell them your name, your occupation, and then he proceeds to ask folks questions. And I think he's looking for somebody who's talkative, which of course I am, and has some effervescence and some personality. And I must have had what they were looking for, I guess.
So that you randomly get called on down. You don't know that they're going to call your name, right, when you're in the audience?
Absolutely. There are 350 people in the audience, and 9 people make it on the show as contestants, and you don't know until George Gray, the announcer, intones, "Come on down." And in fact, it is so noisy and rambunctious in that studio, you really can't even hear your name. That's why everybody looks so surprised, because suddenly you'd look down and there's a cue card with your name on it. And so you're in a state of shock.
Yeah, on some of those shows, it always looks like the family or the people around the person are telling them they won. Go down
and
there.
And that's exactly what happened.
Let's talk about 3 moments of your heart must be racing. The first moment is you get your name gets called up, you go down there.
Yeah.
Then you win, you guess the price correctly enough to be able to call it up to the game. That has to be number 2. Then you win on the wheel. You got closest to a dollar. And then you go to the showcase. Actually, there's 4. This must have been a very... what was your heart thinking? You've been on TV a long time. I mean, you've done this, but this is a lot of adrenaline pumping through your mind.
Well, and this is where you have to know pricing. And I embarrassed myself in the first round because the first item was a retro dishwasher. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't go out and buy a lot of appliances. And so, you know, mindful of the fact that I didn't want to go over in the price, I went way under, I guess $249, and, well, suffice to say, I didn't get called up for the first game.
But many people pick a dollar and get picked up also, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But in this case, I was way off. So the next round of guessing was some sunglasses, some designer sunglasses. Well, of course, I'm one of those who buys my sunglasses from Target. And so, you know, I'm not familiar with the price of Armani sunglasses, but go figure, my 18-year-old daughter is familiar with the price of them, and she's hollering down a price. And fortunately, it was close enough to the real price, and I got the chance to come down.
How do you even, when I watch the show and I see people screaming out numbers when there's a contestant on stage, probably confused at everything that's happened in the last 20 minutes, do you even hear the numbers they're shouting out to you?
After I made that first foible of saying $249 for the dishwasher, I thought, I better start listening to this audience because I think they're a little more in tune with the pricing than I am. And as it happens, my husband sat next to a fella named Chuck. And Chuck is, I think, a Price is Right, wonk. And so he was on top of the pricing. And so Brent and Chuck talked about the pricing, and then they'd both holler out a price. And, so I started watching for their cues.
There's a lot of strategy behind this. My guest is Deborah Lawrence. She was not only a fantastic reporter at WCCO-TV, but also a successful Price is Right winner. And I'm really fascinated by this because, again, I intend to go out there and win a car also. But let's talk about the Showcase Showdown. Okay, this is the part I really like, and it's on YouTube. We don't have our internet connection up to the audio today, but you can go to YouTube and check this out, or actually on the Price is Right website. So you're at the showcase, and you see your fabulous showcase prizes, and you won it.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, in fact, they show you the two prizes, apparently I had the best price in the Showcase Showdown or whatever, and so I had the chance to issue the first pick. So they showed us the trip to Belize and the sailboat and the patio furniture, and I decided to turn that down and pass it on to Malik, who was the other Showcase Showdown contestant. And then I had a chance to see what was behind door number two, and I really had thought going in, if I'm fortunate enough to do this, it would probably be nice to get another vehicle because my daughter's going to be taking one of our cars to college this next year. So, and by gosh, I was lucky when they opened the door and there was a Jeep Patriot and a trip to Vancouver and some snow skiing equipment, which, of course, my husband and I don't snow ski, but hey, The car sure looked mighty appealing.
So let me ask you this. Do you get to bring the car home, or does it come, like, in 12 weeks?
Well, first what happens is when you get done with the show, they hustle all of the winners into a room backstage, and that is where you start signing a ton of papers. And basically, you promise that you won't reveal the results to anyone until the day of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we taped on March 27th. The show aired on April 26th. So I went ahead and, had to sign non-disclosure forms. And then after the show airs, the companies that provided prizes start contacting you. So in the last week, I've been contacted by an automobile dealer in California who helped scout out the right color. And as it happens in California, Jeeps are all two-wheel drive. They have no need for a four-wheel. So I asked if I could buy up and pay the difference and get a four-wheel drive. So hopefully it'll be on a transport coming our way in the next couple of weeks.
That's very exciting. No, that's very, very cool. I know that, again, a lot of people that I know who have gone on as audience members have not been able to be called up. But not only did you get called up and also the wheel, you won the showcase. I think that's...
Yeah, imagine that.
That's pretty
awesome. Once-in-a-lifetime experience. Oh, which, by the way, when you're on a show like this, they also make you sign a form that says you will not appear on another game show for the next 10 years. So
I think this
truly is a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me.
So Let's Make a Deal and the new Hollywood Squares are out now for
8-9 years.
Okay.
But we want to share the goodie with a lot of people. So, you know, it's only fair that many people should have this opportunity.
Well, I think it's great, and I commend you for not revealing the secrets. I know that on the social media sites you sent some pictures occasionally, and a lot of us were wondering, okay, did you just get a nice picture? But you didn't just get up there. You won it all. Well, we're all very excited for you.
And here's the secret behind those pictures. Just like when somebody goes on a cruise, they have a photographer there ahead of time to take pictures of people before they go in the studio. And so that may have looked like the set, but in reality, the picture behind me was really a green screen. And like so many people going on a cruise or going to a luau or whatever, we decided to buy the pictures as a keepsake, not expecting that we would indeed be big winners.
If anyone has questions on how to do this, talk to Deborah Lawrence. She will give you the tips on how to be a successful Price is Right contestant. Deborah, thank you for calling in today. I appreciate this. This is great stuff.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take some notes here in order to get on and win some two-wheel Jeeps in California.
Two-wheel Jeeps. My one upgrade, yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we have a big show today, and when we come back, we have Rob Lear of Lear Communications and formerly of KSDP-TV. He was a sports reporter, anchor, and investigative journalist for 24 years. We will be talking to Rob about his career after this commercial break on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, and with me, my guest, Rob Lear of Lear Communications and formerly of KSDP-TV. Welcome.
Tom, thank you. What a pleasure to be here.
When's the last time you were behind the microphone? How long has it been?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I do some announcing, some public address announcing, mm-hmm. and I've done some bits and pieces, but actually on the air, it's probably been, almost a decade.
Doesn't seem like that, though. It seems like it was just a couple of years ago.
Well, it's like riding a bike.
Right.
You know, when you were in the business as long as I was and enjoyed every day in the business, this was never work.
And it's May. It's sweeps month. So you would normally be, you know, working on a big investigative story.
Right.
Some of them are, you know, entertaining during May, especially on Channel 5. There's some good ones out there.
There's nothing like the sweeps in local television.
No.
And the stakes are high for everybody. And the intensity in the newsroom gets ramped up. And to be able to see the overnight ratings when you come into work the next day, there's just... there's something about being competitive and having those kind of competitive juices and getting, you know, that kind of daily fix, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of the work that you were doing.
So 14 years in sports and about 10 years in investigative journalism, correct?
That is correct, yes.
It's May, so I'm sure you're missing right now. You could be at the Twins game, in the 40-degree weather, reporting on some... A lackluster team this year. I hate to say that, but it's not been great. But do you miss a sports reporting? Do you miss traveling on the road and seeing the Twins and seeing the Vikings?
Well, I don't necessarily miss the sports reporting because I've now become a bigger fan since mm-hmm. I've been out of the broadcasting business. Because there, you know, when you're working as a reporter, there are certain restraints and there are certain things that you couldn't cross lines. It's much funner being a fan than it is to be the reporter. But, you know, what I've missed since I've been out of the business is the adrenaline rush of the chase of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And there is just nothing that can match to be a reporter and to work on a story that's enterprising, mm-hmm. to work on a story that nobody else has, and then to go through that checks and balances process. And at KSTP, it was every story was just extremely well scrutinized. Mm-hmm. Like it should be.
Right.
But in today's social media world, you know, even with the last big event there in Boston, you know, so much criticism about the urgency to get stories out that those facts just were not checked in that kind of a process. But so the adrenaline rush of a story was my passion, and that's the part that I miss, is that I don't have a way to share anything else that I find anymore, you know, along the way in my business now as a media consultant.
And it's important to point out, it's, you know, 10 years out of the business of actual reporting. The internet in 2003 was still, and it was there, but it was email. It was not the social media aspect of being able to report and find facts or find alleged facts within minutes. It was not prevalent yet. I mean, when you were doing reporting, you were doing the actual pull up books, pull out the phone,
no,
call
this
people.
This was gumshoe reporting,
right?
Absolutely. This was, this was back in the day. Yeah, this is when you could sit on a story for the 10 o'clock news. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I had this conversation recently with a young reporter in the market, because as my business, I'm now consulting companies that are dealing with the press. And, you know, nobody can even comprehend anymore that the fact that you'd have a story and then you'd want to decide when you're going to put it on the air.
I mean, right.
You just, you know, now we live in an instant society. And when you have something, you get it out there, and there's so many channels to do that.
Regardless of what the state the product is in. And we talk about back in the day, and my guest Rob Lear today from Lear Consulting and KSTP, the day could be 5 years ago. I mean, now we talk about the day, you know, 20 years ago, the day would have been the golden age of radio and TV and mm-hmm. would have been a much more, what do you call it?
The day is always in flux.
The days are always seem to be better days than they were when we lived them. People say, yeah. Well, things are better.
Yes.
Things are better 20 years ago, and there's problems 20
well,
years ago too.
Yeah.
But right now, we could say 2007, 2008 was back in the day, because you look at the amount of digital information that we pass among each other. Just this morning, I was pulling up some stuff here for my interview with Rob, and I don't think 5 years ago I would have been able to pull out the amount of audio clips I did 5 years ago.
I think my back in the day was 1999, before I started using the internet. That's the back in the day.
And I'm sure everyone had wacky screen names at AOL.com. You know, Rob, let's just take a step back. I want to play a little clip here where it all began. This is
okay.
Then we'll talk a little bit about this era.
Good evening, everybody. On the top of the world of sports, North Dakota's two state universities can forget about thoughts of joining the Big Sky Conference, at least for another season. League officials meeting the night in Bozeman, Montana, rejected expansion bids from UND and NDSU, citing problems in scheduling and travel with a 10-team conference. This move was looked upon with great anticipation by Sioux and Bison fan supporters as a great opportunity to gain Division I status in both football and basketball and to enhance scheduling with non-conference opponents. So with no going to be the answer, sorry fans, but this could mean another year with Platteville on the Sioux schedule. The Minnesota Twins are enjoying the day off today. Just ask the Twins' bewildered pitching staff. Minnesota coming off a horrible road trip, winning only 3 of 9 ball games.
You're good. Where'd you find that?
Runs or better on that Eastern swing. Currently in fifth place in the American League's West Division.
Yeah, that could have been last week, or it could have been. This was 1978, the Rob Lear audition tape. I believe this is the tape that Stanley Hubbard looked at and decided to bring you to town.
You were absolutely right. I had forgotten that was even in my pile of stuff. And did I ever share with you that the story about my interview and audition at KSTP?
No, but let's hear it.
It was, you know, back in 78, 79. And I was a young budding journalist who had it was my dream to be able to work in my hometown.
Mm-hmm. And you're from Edina, for people who don't know, you're from
Edina. I grew up in Minneapolis, okay. You know, Minneapolis Southwest, right over by Lake Harriet.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school at the University of North Dakota. And so I had some radio television experience at the University of North Dakota and their School of Journalism and all that. And I had put together a tape and wanted to go to the next step, which I thought could be KSTP. And I had my audition tape, and you know, now everybody, it's all, you know, electronic file and, you're, you know, I don't even think you'd carry it with you. But in this particular interview that I had with Mr. Hubbard at Hubbard Broadcasting on University Avenue, they asked me to bring my tape. You know, I mean, it was through a family friend that had referred me to get a chance to have this opportunity. I bring my tape into Mr. Hubbard's office, and he's got this stack of tape machines, and it's the old, that's the big
three quarter inch
videotapes, which they don't make at all anymore.
Don't I know?
Which is your world in trying to convert them. And anyway, long story short, it came to after we had a lot of conversations about, you know, this and that, he wanted to put my tape in. And so he goes over to this stack of playback machines that he had, and he puts my tape in, and they had big, bold buttons that they were very, these manual buttons.
All right.
And you couldn't ever have used those machines and not at some time push the wrong button, right? Okay. I mean, I know I did. And so he puts the tape in, and instead of pushing play, he pushed fast forward. Okay. Well, I had my, you know, behind the news desk clip first.
Right.
And then second, at the University of North Dakota, I did a lot of play-by-play of hockey.
Right.
And because they do play college hockey up there, and they put a lot of their behind their journalism school doing hockey. Well, you know, anybody from this region knows Stanley Hubbard's passion for hockey. And it was like a match made in heaven. This was like supposed to be. So he you know, after he said, oh, because it started to fast forward, then he pushed play. So it's gone right by my my on-set material.
Hey, anchors are dime a dozen. We want to see a guy that can do some play-by-play hockey.
Well, and that's what this became. So he said, oh, you do hockey? I said, well, yeah, at the University of North Dakota, I do the hockey games, and you know, I've done them for the last couple of years, and I travel with the team, which I did, and this and that. Well, and then that led to he then, at, you know, 5 minutes later, he called up Stan Turner, who was the news director at KSTP at that time, and he introduced me to Stan, and he said, Stan, this guy is going to start tomorrow, and he'll be in your newsroom, and let's find a spot for him in the sports department.
And let's talk about, I mean, Channel 5, this was the number one news town, news company in town. This is 51% share of the ratings. Ron Majors is there. This is the place to work at. You're not going to a independent UHF station. You're going to the place in town.
No, this was, they were getting a 53 share on Sunday nights at that time.
And did you do, now, I don't recall, did the KSP have the North Stars at that time, or did you do some?
Not at that time, but throughout my tenure with the sports affiliation with KSTP, they must have had the North Stars two or three times. They'd get them for two, 3 years, they'd lose them and then come back. They had University of Minnesota packages. And what a great opportunity. I mean, you'd go up to the second floor and you could work on the radio station on the sports side anyway. And then, you know, you had the job with the television newsroom, and it was all right in the same building.
My guest, Rob Lear, talking about the first days at KSDP, coming from Grand Forks to St. Paul, Minneapolis. So hockey is your passion. Hockey is your passion.
Oh,
hockey,
yes.
Hockey's
yes.
The sport itself, playing it. We had a guest a few months ago named Bob Bruce, who credits you to showing him how to play hockey. And
did he?
He
should have. I'm glad to hear that.
Oh yeah. Well, he said. Yeah. Well, that and he says that you owe him that Lake Placid trip too. But
well, he did give me that assignment. Yes.
we'll duke that out a different time. Let's play a clip. This is from 1985, January 21st, and Rob Lear reporting on Herb Brooks.
Well, it has been an absolutely amazing day in the news, and there have also been some interesting developments in sports.
Certainly have, and this one, though, has been talked about for some time. Herb Brooks to the Minnesota North Stars? Well, that's a personnel move that's been rumored for a long time, and with today's announcement that the Rangers have fired Brooks as their coach and replaced him with general manager Craig Patrick, that talk is starting to heat up all over again. Brooks had served as the Rangers head coach since 1981, but in 3.5 seasons behind the Big Apple's bench, Brooks' team never lived up to the expectations of his gold medal winning ways of 1980. This year, the Rangers fell to fifth place in the Patrick division and have won only 15 times in their first 45 games. Herb's contract with the Rangers expired at the end of the season, so naturally there had been a great deal of speculation that he would not return. It's no secret that Minnesota is Herb's home. In fact, his family has continued to live here while Herb was working in New York. As for Brooks joining the North Stars, General Manager Lou Nanny told me today he would not hesitate to add Brooks to his staff. That is, if Herb is interested. Louis made it clear that Glenn Sonmore is his coach, and even though Herb's forte is coaching the North Star, that is, his forte is coaching, the North Stars would welcome Brooks as a coordinator of scouting and development. Asked how soon that could happen.
That's a lot of legends you're talking to in that day.
Well, and did the Herb Brooks coaching saga ever end? I mean, it was just a great character, a great man, and he was on again, off again, and what a great story that played itself out. You said that was 85?
That was January 21st, 1985.
You know, and that went on for more than a decade, you know, and I remember when he was named, when he took the North Stars job, we ended up going to New York, and because there were these league meetings, and that's where the Gunn brothers, I remember it was, KSTP allowed me to travel a great deal as a reporter. And I mean, that's the side of the business. It's changed a lot because now you can always get somebody else to do it with
Someone's cell phone can pick up the same video that they can, you know, fly you out to do.
Right. But back in this day, well, if we call it back in the day, we did a lot of that kind of gumshoe reporting. And Herb would later tell me and Lou Nanny, because they were together. They were at the Marriott Marquis in Times Square. And we had gone out and were trying to find where Herb and the guns, and we were following the story. And I don't know why Herb would pull my arm about this, but he told me that him and Louis actually looked out the marquee room at the Marriott and could see me shooting a stand up in Times Square that I was out there covering that story. And it was like a day later that they had the big major news conference that they announced him formally and everything else. What a legend.
Did that feel like work? I mean, you're doing what you love at that point. You're not. Does that feel like you're punching a time clock in and going to work?
No. It never felt that way. It just, I never had a day where I didn't want to get out of bed to go report on something.
Well, think of how many guys and women, that's your dream. I mean, you're living a dream that many people have been worked a long time to try to do, and well deserved, by the way. You did sports for about 14 years. You toggled between anchoring weekends and, you know, backing up and then doing sports reporting. At what point did you make the decision to go into news versus sports?
Well, it was all economics. At the time that I'd been at KSTP for 14 years, I had covered 3 Winter Olympics, had really a lot of fun and had a lot of good success in covering the major sports. I had a news director at the time. That, you know, you were typically on a 1 or 2 year contract. And so every other, every 24 months, you're having these contract talks again. And I had a news director at that time who said, you know, very candidly, you know, if you want to make more money in this business, and specifically here at this company, we need to raise your profile beyond sports. And she said, there's no reason that what you're doing on the sports side doesn't transfer over to the news side. Because you get a whiff of a story and you go after it. And I was intrigued by that. But I also was intrigued because I was, you know, providing, I've got three boys. And at that time, they were all, you know, very young, you know, probably 6, 8, 11 years old at that time. And so the idea that I could, you know, continue my career and stay with the same company and just make that little crossover from news, from sports to news, I was intrigued by that. I mean, this was a new challenge.
Do you think there's a misconception sometimes that a sports guy or a sports reporter, they can't do news? I mean, they only know.
That's because some can't. You know, I mean, really. But I think that journalists, I think you can get stereotyped that you can are only good to do one or the other. Look at Randy Shaver now, who's doing a really nice job over at CARE.
Well, Tim McNiff, Jeff Passelt. There's a list of people that are doing news now that did, I mean, not just sports for a couple of years, but decades of sports.
And I would always, you know, I would always argue or have conversations with folks to say, you need to be so nimble as a sports reporter. I mean, it happens now, and the next minute you're on the air trying to piece it all together. You're trying to report what you just saw. And that turnaround time and to be that quick on your feet, I think as a sports reporter, is great training to become a good news reporter.
Do you remember your first story on news? What was your first story, if you recall?
Well, when I was going through that transition, I'm trying to. There was a very high-profile state legislator from Willmar who had. There were some ethic violations that were.
Was this the golf and phone scandals of '93?
Well, that could have. That's about the time.
Okay.
And I kind of remember the legislator's name.
Was it a woman?
Nope. It was a man.
Okay.
And long story short, he had really dodged the media. I mean, he really hadn't really told his side of the story. He kept saying there was more to the story, and it was this perception of impropriety, you know. But it was at the time it was kind of a bigger deal, and he hadn't really had his side of the story told. And I remember I showed up at his house out in Willmar, and he was surprised that I would meet him at the door. He says, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "You know, I just, this story won't go away, and I'm here to provide a platform to do the story." And he says, I'm just running out the door here to go play golf. He says, "You want to come play golf with me?" He said, "Oh, then I'll sit down with you when we're done." And I said, "Okay." I was dressed for work. I wasn't dressed for golf. But I spent, we played 9 holes, and.
Who won?
I'm sure I lost. I love golf. Golf doesn't love me. But in those days, I think it was film. It wasn't tape. I don't remember all that. But the story then went on like the next night. That's what you know, like I said, that, you know, today you get that story on by the 6, you'd be done with the golf at 4 o'clock, you'd be on by 5.
Right.
But that was the first time I actually fronted a news story that had been enterprised. And voila, I was in the news business.
That's great. You know, one of the best interviews I think you did, and it's on tcmedianow.com, Hal Greenwood, who was a high-profile person in this town, Midwest Federal, and involved in a lot of different companies, the Twins and other things. And you had one of the very, very rare interviews with Hal Greenwood while he was in prison.
Well, it actually, you know, the last year of his sentence, it was a home monitoring.
Right.
So he was under his home monitoring portion of his sentence, but it was at his North Shore property.
Right.
And which just baffled me that the government didn't get that. I mean, you're allowed one, you know, they took everything else from this guy.
Right.
But he was able to keep that in the family. And, you know, I don't know if the family still has it, but it was a spectacular right on the North Shore up there piece of property. You're right. We sat down with him over the course of a couple of days and did a couple of interviews with him.
I think I thought I had the theory why you left sports right here. Let's play this clip right here. And this is you in Chicago. The Wild are playing Chicago tonight. So this is the North Stars playing Chicago in 1985.
They're down 4-0 at one point tonight. They have tied it up. The game is tied now, 4-4. North Stars and Blackhawks are in their locker room. They're headed into overtime for the second game in a row. You'll remember that in game 4, it went into a double overtime before the issue was decided. The North Stars have really proven a lot of people wrong. Not many gave them a chance to be in this game, but tonight they have staged a strong comeback, and they are tied 4-4 and headed for overtime. Let's take it back to you.
All right, Rob, stay with him. Was that guy booing our Rob Lear out there?
That is got to be. I mean, it's a tough place to play, but if the sportscaster goes in there and
it's
gets
tough.
Booed.
One note here. Brett McNeil out of Minneapolis North was named Mr. Basketball in Minnesota.
Rob wasn't even wearing green.
No, but they know him by now because he's been there. They tried throwing beer at him last time when the North Stars won in Chicago, and they were pretty accurate from what I understand.
Well, maybe.
If they win tonight, he'll be doused real good.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that is our news. We thank you for being with us.
That man was just as our former governor, actually, that is booing you right there. He's got the sunglasses and the facial hair, and I think that he has a...
How about the news anchor there was Dennis Bowens.
Dennis Bowens, yeah.
You know, still in Seattle.
And he's at King TV in Seattle.
And Larry Burnett.
Larry Burnett.
Working with the WNBA.
He is working with WNBA. He is. He actually sent me some tapes, Rob, which there's some more Rob Lear coming on the site here pretty soon. There's some more stuff on its way. Let's take a break. We'll talk more with Rob Lear on Flashback Twin Cities. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osman with my guest Rob Lear of Lear Communication and KSUP-TV. Rob, we'll talk about what you're doing now. I do want to play one more clip. You know, as a person on TV, you have a very public life. I mean, things you do, people think they know you. They see you on TV nightly. They assume that you're their friend or they're your relative. This is from August 31st, 1985. Actually, September 2nd, 85. Let's listen to this.
Last, but certainly not least, tonight, Channel 5 Sports has obtained exclusive pictures of the unofficial winner in the Eyewitness News Baby of the Week contest. Please meet Robert Murray Lear, who happens to be the one and only contestant in this week's biased contest. This lovable 8-pound baby was born last Thursday, and at last report, Mom Maureen and baby Robbie were doing just fine. But asked what he wants to do when he grows up, Robbie was quoted as saying, "Nothing at all." In honor of this, we have cigars for all when the show is over. Chocolate cigars at that.
Congratulations,
Thank
by
you
the
so
way.
Much.
Thanks, Rob. Finally, a reminder to stay tuned.
That's a good clip, too.
No, it's and by the way, everyone, that's chocolate cigars. Rob did not handle tobacco on the news set. I want to make sure we clear that up. It's very sensitive nowadays. So you did journalism 10 years. You did news 10 years and left in 2003. And what, you know, you went to be a consultant. And what did you think you were going to do at that point? Because a lot of people I've talked to on, you know, here have either left on their own accord or, you know, they were being held back, as they might say, and then what? You know, what comes next?
Well, I mean, it was kind of an evolution in that I had 24 great years at KSTP, mm-hmm. you know, 14 in sports, 10 in investigative news. And when I left, I had the best job in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. And so by having the best job in the newsroom, it was it just allowed me a lot of time at the end of my career. I was doing special projects, and I mm-hmm. wasn't on the air, you know, but a couple of times a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I had kind of weaned myself off a little bit about the daily fix of it all. I was more into the bigger stories mm-hmm. and the high profile type stories. But it was, you know, I got out of the business at that real economic crunch where the downsizing of the media just, you know, exploded.
Right.
And anybody with 20 years experience or more, mm-hmm. You know, was making a lot of money back then. And the economics of broadcasting didn't add up. And I was not asked to leave the station. I was asked to change my position at the station. Mm-hmm. And with that, they wanted to restructure my contract. And so at that time, I was at a crossroads to say, you know, do I really want to walk out the back door today and come back on Monday, right. you know, at a, you know, at a 35% pay decrease? Or has this 24 years of broadcast experience, has it allowed me an opportunity to go out and work with others that perhaps don't have the expertise and experience mm-hmm. of how to deal with the press? And really, I was having a lot of those experiences. And when I was a reporter and I was onto a story and I'd call somebody and, you know, you would just literally sometimes catch people off guard and they were just not comfortable dealing with the press.
Right. And there's any university course can teach a public relations course, but when you're into it 24 years, mm-hmm. You may not have a PhD, but look, I know how to talk to street reporters, I know how to talk to sports reporters, and I know how to that bridge between the corporate press release and someone showing up at your door, knocking on the door with a microphone.
Right. Well, and so that's what I thought, you know, how can I harness what I have here and turn it into a new career or a second career? And I'll never forget this, that it was in 91. It would have been later than that. The North Stars left here.
93.
So Bob Gainey was coaching the North Stars. Mm-hmm. It must have been 91, 92. And his wife, Kathy, died tragically of cancer at way too early of an age. And the North Stars were going shortly after this on a road trip up to Canada. And I have all the respect in the world for Bob Gainey, Hall of Famer, just mm-hmm. Just an unbelievable man. And I was at the rink in and around that time, and I was going to leave. And he said, Hey, Rob, can I talk to you for a minute? And he, you know, and he was a very private person. And he shut the door and he said, you know about my wife that's died. He says, I'm concerned I'm going back to Canada for the first time since her passing, and I know I'm going to be asked a lot of questions from the Canadian press about this. How should I handle it? And that little, and I thought we talked it through, mm-hmm. and when I left the rink that day, I had a whole new perspective for that mm-hmm. somebody thought that this experience and what I was doing for a living perhaps could translate into a career.
Right.
And I've never forgotten that. That was to me a signal to say, you know, make something out of this. You've been doing this and it's been fun. It's been a hobby. It's, you know, you've gone to a lot of great places. You've traveled the world. You've met newsmakers from all over. But now do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the last 10 years, I now have a consulting company and I work directly with small companies. I work with large companies. I coach people who are dealing with the press.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about messaging. We talk about how to put your best foot forward. We try to manage crises when they arise. It's all just about trying to tap my experience and expertise and making people comfortable, because this is still the most powerful medium, the media.
Exactly.
And there's so much that can be gained from your message and how you talk to people. And so that's and when I'm dealing with my clients and I'm working on media deadlines, I feel like I'm still in the business, and it's just so much fun. And sometimes I have to remember and try to be more sensitive, because sometimes these are things that are more impacting their own lives.
Sure. Because people are paying you. You have to be a little more sensitive than when you're actually just going up through the microphone to someone's face and asking for a comment. Right.
Right. So anyway, that's what I do. And it has been just a lot of fun.
What's the website for people that want to?
Well, it's Lear Communication, and it's, you know, LEER Communication. So it's www.learcommunication.com.
We were looking at some of the clients you had. I think my guest Rob Lear of Lear Communication. Forgive me, I think I said communications, but
that's okay.
The Twins ballpark. You worked with not only the Twins for pitching the ballpark, but also during the actual process of building the ballpark, which had been a great thing for you.
I felt like we were working behind the curtain as they built Target Field. We were the agency of record for the Minnesota Ballpark Authority, which mm-hmm. is the public agency, and that was just a lot of fun. But my clients have ranged from working on behalf of the American Academy of Neurology, working with some of the best and brightest neurologists in the country, and working on some of the media training exercises that we do. This very high profile has been the labor status of our orchestras in town.
Right.
And the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, the musicians. We just completed.
That settled. St. Paul settled now. Minneapolis is the next one.
St. Paul just settled, and I worked as their consultant for the last 10 months, and just met some marvelous people, very talented individuals.
Working with the mayor, working with the musicians, working with the representatives.
Right. But we worked on the musicians' side.
Okay.
And you know, here again are these talented people who are in the prime of their careers, working at the top of their profession, and who have worked on all these great stages, and then the media calls and they say, what should I call them back, and what do I tell them? You know, and so they should be telling us, you know, given their expertise and how they can play an instrument.
It's and you're learning a lot too. I'm guessing you're getting a whole new education every time you take on a new client.
The best part about reporting was you'd walk into work and you didn't know if you're going to be covering a city council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know if you're going to be covering a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know if you're going to be breaking medical news. And yet then you had a couple of hours to submerge yourself in that topic,
mm-hmm.
and to lean on the people that were your experts and the people that could help you best understand all of these nuances of whatever the topic was that you were going to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the day, you were a so-called expert,
mm-hmm.
Or at least you knew enough to be able to report accurately and fairly what that story was.
The Rolodex must be pretty big at this point.
Well, it got to be, you know, and that was interesting too, because when you are making that transition out of being a reporter into the business world, the people that I thought I would have some crossover with, mm-hmm. and carry with me, that it didn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you just you have to be reminded you don't take any of this stuff personal anymore.
Right.
But I, you know, I've got some great clients now, and people said, where does your work come from? It comes from referrals. It comes mm-hmm. from people who say, you know, I've worked with him. He really does have a knack. He does have a sense. He knows timing. And it's not all, you know, not all news is bad news. You know, we work with a lot of people that are launching new products. They're trying to roll out new businesses. They've hired good people.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that people always say is, you know, how come my company never gets any, doesn't get quoted in the paper, or nobody online is doing stories about the success of our mm-hmm. company? I said, well, you have to tell them. You know,
it's tailoring a message, and I think that you know, you can't be an expert at everything, and I think that especially now in this kind of startup company world we have, and you know, getting a website domain does not mean you're an expert at, you're an engineer, a marketer, a media consultant. You got to do what you're good at, it's okay to ask for help and invest in pieces that you may not be the expert at.
Yeah, and it's we've been able to tap the great network of KSTP alum.
Mm-hmm.
That there's still a lot of people that are doing video in this market.
Andy
still
Scootman
and Andy's been a partner of mine and worked a lot of projects together. But you know, when we need to get things shot from a video and production standpoint, there's a whole list of KSTP former photographers
sure.
that are now dabbling in that business. And when you need to, you know, they just, what you miss is the newsroom and the camaraderie and the collaboration of just very, very smart people that all work together.
Let's take one flashback clip again. This is from 1981 at Met Center.
They're down 4-0 at one point tonight. They have tied it up. The game is tied now, 4-4. North
Stars Chicago Stadium.
Sorry, wrong clip. That was my fault. I could listen to the booing one again. It's
way
fun.
Out at Metropolitan Stadium. The first game already in progress. Rob Lear is standing by to tell us just exactly, in a few words, exactly what's happening out at the stadium.
Well, Bob, the Twins are off to a good start, as you mentioned, in the first of two games to be played out here tonight. The Twins lead 4-0 over the Oakland A's as we head into the top half of the sixth inning. The Twins scored three of the runs in the bottom of the second inning. As you see right there, Butch Weiniger grounds into a fielder's choice. That scores Glenn Adams. The Twin had a 1-0 lead. Then it was Hoskin Powell scoring two runs on that single to left. That was his 26th and 27th RBI of the season. The Twins led 3-0. They've added another run in the bottom of the fifth inning on a Glenn Adams double. The Twins lead 4-0 behind Pete Redfern, who's on the hill. He's allowed just four A's hits, and he appears to be off.
Pete Redfern.
There's some names you haven't heard in a while. Well, again, Met Stadium, and that's it's amazing. It's been 30 years since that's been gone.
Well, to think in our lifetime, you know, not only did they close Met Stadium and implode it, but now the Metrodome is going to be long gone.
The Metrodome everyone said we needed to have, and now it's gonna go away.
Yeah. It's I guess the lifespan of a stadium, a pro sports venue these days, is about 25 years, which is hard to believe.
Do you when the stadium first Met Stadium closed, was it tough for you guys? Did you guys miss the Met Stadium versus the Metrodome?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, look at there's nothing better than being at Target Field for an outdoor baseball game. I mean, that's
if the snow melts, it might be kind
well,
of fun.
But that's that's part of the charm. I mean, that's what we used to pride ourselves about it, being how weather worthy we were, and now everybody would rather be indoors, I guess.
Do you recall the coldest day in that stadium you were at?
Yeah, probably one of those old Viking playoff games, like 75, probably against Dallas or one of those. Those were some cold days.
Well, you know what? Now it's great to be a fan, right?
Oh, it's nothing better than being a fan.
Rob, thanks for coming in today. It's been
Tom,
great talking about 24 years of KSTP. Also at Lear Communication, learcommunication.com. Love to have you come back and let us know what's going on.
Well, and my hat's off to you for living the days of old television past live on.
Well, check out tcmedianow.com if you want to see Rob again on TV. You can see Rob any time of the day at tcmedianow.com. We will be back next week with Joan Steffend on Flashback Twin Cities. This is KLBB Club 1220.